ladies and gentlemen, this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Wednesday. That's right, Wednesday, July 30th, 2025. With me coming up will be Sam Andrews of, I'm telling you what, from the Freedom Center, by the way. And he's going to have a lot to say. He has a lot of information, and I'll just say this. I believe the information he has, a lot of people don't. Are not aware of, and some new revelations coming up. So, this is going to be a show to tell your friends about. I can pretty much guarantee you on that. Thankfully, the threat from the tsunami yesterday was overstated, which, boy, that's appreciated much. There was a lot of, I don't know. It's a lot of talk about that, right? Of course, when we were live, there were people, you know, worrying about that and very, very concerned. But I think there's more in the offing in terms of events like that. A lot of different things in the news. Just before Sam comes on here, I'm waiting for him to pop in here. But I found a couple of things interesting today as I was looking over the landscape of news. I don't know whether you saw this or not, but with Alex Jones today, Robert Barnes was on talking about the Trump inner circle. And one of the people that he said, you know what, we have to not, one of the people you really can't have in that inner circle is Susie Wiles. Now, And I think Alex too, during that period, also had inferred what I've been stating, and that's the fact that you don't want to. You've got this. How can I put this? You've got this army of Trump supporters who blindly follow him. And then you've got this inside clique of people who want to have control. And then you've got the supporters of the Constitution and the rule of law. And they're all pretty much at odds with one another. I don't know if that made sense, but there's a lot of people at odds with one another right now. And we have to be aware of that. But Robert Barnes saying, you know, Susie Wiles is pretty much the gatekeeper, and she's running, keeping the swampy White House, so to speak, the swamp within the White House. So just saying. And there was an interesting video too, like him or don't like him, I don't care, about Ted Cruz giving a prediction, I guess, about what would happen if Mandami is elected mayor of New York City. As you can imagine, we don't have to play it. Nothing good from that, but you would see a major, major, it would just be, the people of New York will suffer a great deal from that. All right. So, and there's a lot of other news going on, a lot of other things going on as well. But I see that Sam is with me right now, Sam Andrews from the Freedom Center. He's on, and it's good to see him. I see some things. Okay, there we go. Some things flashing up on my screen. But Sam, welcome, and it's good to see you. I understand you were otherwise busy for the last several weeks. It's good to see you, my friend.
Thank you for having me, Doug. It's great to see you. It has been a little busy the last three and a half weeks, but it's great to be at home, and it's great to be chatting with you. So,
I won't talk out of school, but I know that you were otherwise unavailable. But I'm glad it was. I expected you to be gone for another 3-4 weeks, but you made it back earlier than I anticipated. Which I'm glad you're back.
So. Everything overseas went well.
Good.
And we learned some things, and I kind of killed two birds with one stone with this trip. It was nice to have some commonality in the various countries and who I spoke with, and I got some really solid stuff on a variety of topics that need answers for various people, and so it was good fun.
Success, then, is what I'm hearing, right?
Indeed, absolutely. It was a good trip. How have you been? I haven't spoke to you since all the other stuff went on.
Yeah, I've been fine. I've been fine. So we'll talk about that later. But I want to ask you now. I know that you were talking with Eric. So what do we need to know? I know that the program title today is The $1 Billion Answer with Sam Andrews with respect to Epstein. People, to me, do you want to start here? I mean, is that?
Yeah, if you want to get into that heavy stuff, let's dive in. I mean,
yeah, I do.
But let me lay out some concerns I have before we dive in head first. Of course, there are no perfect human beings. You know, in our political world, in our political space, there are no perfect people. Everything is a trade-off. And you and I are very philosophically aligned in the sense that we hate compromisers. We hate politicians that compromise our morals, compromise our constitution, compromise us spiritually, emotionally, legally, tax dollar wise, you know. And that's why we all smiled when Doge got put in place and Elon Musk and a team of guys went up there to do some looking around.
Yep.
But, you know, I have bad news. I mean, to talk about the things that you want to talk about, these are things that are very divisive among pseudo-conservatives, Republicans, Democrats, real conservatives, real patriots. These are very divisive things. And I know some things that I might say tonight might hurt you. And it's not meant that way.
Hurt the population or people listening and viewing?
All of the above.
All right.
But I'm going to speak really frankly because that's the only way I know how to speak.
Well, sometimes truth hurts and you've got to deal with it. So,
if you've ever gotten a cancer diagnosis like I have, you know what a shock that is to your system. Yeah. But thank God somebody found it in me before it killed me. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, anytime anyone that's gone through traumatic, life-threatening medical issues knows that it's not just the truth that sets them free, like Christ said in the Gospel of John, but it's also the truth that saves your life. And we are fighting for our very existence as Americans right now, and nobody really understands. The average American doesn't get how serious the problem is. And I'm not making excuses for Trump. Please, even though I wear a Trump hat, you know, I tell people all the time that they come up to me and they see me wearing a Trump hat and they say, "Oh, you're a big Trump supporter, are you?" And I said, "No. I'm more of a truth supporter, but this Trump hat here on my head, it tells me a lot more about you based on your reaction to it than it will ever tell you about me."
Great and point.
They get this shocked look on their face, right? Yep. But it's just like somebody wearing a mask today. If somebody's wearing a mask driving around in their car alone, that is quite a testament to either a medical condition you don't know about or their mental illness. And well, I say about 95% of the time, it's their mental illness.
Exactly. And we talked about yesterday, we talked about the programming aspect of things, how the population has been programmed. We talk about behavioral profiling, but there's also the behavioral programming. And we've been subjected to that forever.
Yes, sir.
You know, so but good points all. Go ahead. Continue.
So I want people to understand that when I talk about this, I am in zero way excusing the pedophilia of Jeffrey Epstein. I am not excusing that. I'm not saying it didn't exist. We all know it existed. Okay. But the problem is Americans don't understand why it existed. And this is a huge problem. And I always like to start with a little historical perspective. Because when you see a war break out or you see something happen that's traumatic to a large group of people, it really pays to understand why, to go back to the beginning.
Yes.
Okay.
Big proponent of that.
And based on JFK's assassination and other dirty things that our intelligence agencies and governments have done in our lifetimes, in recent history, before we were born, we know this stuff has been going on a while, but it changed. And I want to tell you when it changed. When Jimmy Carter defunded the Air Defense Fighter Network, took the money out of Air Defense Fighter Network. And if you don't know what ADF was, we had pilots in fighter jets, sleeping in hangars, planes fueled up, on a 5-minute ready, all around the border of the continental United States. And those guys were averaging wheels up in 3.5 minutes from a call. That's how disciplined we were back in the 60s and early 70s. And then Carter came along, he defunded ADF, and he defunded our human intelligence capability at a level that is hard to comprehend. Now, what these things did, he took the money from those two entities and he created the Department of Education and basically paid off a bunch of teachers' union cronies for their political support and used gobs of money he took from human intelligence and he took from ADF and he gave it to these union cronies in the teachers' unions. Now, we all know what Trump wants to do with the Department of Education. Good move. Push it. Push the money back to the states. Get rid of that garbage. Get rid of that corruption. I applaud him for that. What most people don't understand is the giant hole that that one move left in funding black projects. So it created a need. See, when Carter did this, he blindsided everybody in the intelligence community. And he took that money and that funding away almost overnight. Nobody got any warning. There was no planning. There was no adjusting. The time period was so short. And when he did that, we had guys in the field. We had clandestine services in the field. We had direct action people in the field working for the interest of the citizens of the United States of America. Now, were they also doing corrupt stuff? Yeah, they were doing corrupt stuff. But that's where it started, okay, when he created that giant hole. And I want everybody listening to write this down. Black projects, from the moment that happened, black projects required dark money. And if you can understand that one concept, that black projects in the intelligence community, not just the United States, MI5, MI6, the Mossad, French intelligence, Saudi Arabia intelligence, right? All of this money that they spend on black projects had to come from somewhere other than government. And that's the principal concept that Trumpsters and MAGA people and real patriots and conservatives need to understand, that black projects require dark money. Now, once you get that, once you understand that reality, then it's a fairly simple process of understanding the Epstein incident.
Okay, I understand that, but how does... how does the existence of black projects and the defunding of ADF relate to one another?
Well, once you took the money away from ADF and human intelligence, and you took all that money out of the intelligence agencies, people were stranded. I mean, and so immediately you mentioned a book a few shows ago that I was on, The Rise of the Warrior Cop.
Yes.
Well, somebody needs to write a book, The Rise of the Dark Money Financiers, because this is what we're talking about. You remember MENA, Arkansas? You remember SEALs, the pilot?
Oh, yeah.
And all of the stuff surrounding that? Okay. Well, do you remember Nancy Reagan and her Just Say No to Drugs campaign?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay. To let you know how bad it is, and I'm not as big a fan of Reagan as most Republicans are. I'm just not, because I know more about what he did, and I worked with people that worked in his administration. And so I know a lot of crap about what the Reagan... But while Nancy was doing the Just Say No thing about drugs, Ronald Reagan was using dark projects, black projects, and dark money to funnel to the Israelis, who then paid Iran for weapons that were then taken to the Contras in Central America. You remember Nicaragua, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So that whole SEALs thing, the dark financiers were involved in all of this. They bought that guy an airport and a half an air force, or half of Air Mobility Command. I mean, it was ridiculous, the money that the Reagan administration spent. And that was all dark money. That was all raised. You've heard of Colonel Ollie North, right?
Of course, yes.
Okay. And there were a lot of other people in our military involved, training people in Arkansas. But I'm just using this as one small example of the hole that was created and that left the door open for guys like Epstein and Khashoggi and Mark Rich and Betancourt, all these dark financiers, to become friends of the intelligence agencies, quote unquote, have their business interests protected internationally by these intelligence communities, and a little money here and there to fund dark projects. You know, nobody gets hurt, right? Wrong. Because when Epstein got involved, by the way, the guy that was instrumental in creating the Clinton Foundation and these other things, see, this stuff's been going on since the late 70s.
With Epstein.
Right.
I mean, I've got a timeline built here, but yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So here's the fundamental flaw in Americans' thinking. They know there was pedophilia going on. They've heard some names of some powerful politicos that may have visited Epstein Island. And they think it was about blackmail and controlling the heads of state. That's the fundamental flaw. That is not the truth. Okay? The truth is that black projects take dark money. Where does that money come from? That money gets raised by financiers like Epstein and Khashoggi, and the biggest weapons dealer in history, probably, and Mark Ridge and Betancourt, all those guys, there's about 12 of them, that have been doing this for the better part of four decades. Okay? Now, Epstein kind of put a different twist on it. So you look at the head of the Ford Foundation, the head of the Carnegie Foundation, and I couldn't believe it came out of Trump's mouth about 3-4 days ago. He said, "Why are you looking at me? I got away from the guy. She'd be looking at these hedge fund managers." I couldn't believe he said that on TV with news cameras all around him. It's the darndest thing I've ever heard a president say, because that was true.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think a lot of people caught that.
I only heard it played one time on the news.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like somebody slipped up and accidentally ran the soundtrack on that video. Yeah. But Trump told the truth. Yeah. You shouldn't be looking at him. Look at all these billionaire hedge fund managers. Look at the ultra billion. And so the pedophilia was really about greasing the skids, and protecting these billionaires' businesses and raising dark money for black projects. It wasn't about controlling heads of state. It wasn't about blackmailing anybody. Now, if I ask somebody, like, let's say you've got a really smart guy that wants to argue this point with me, I'm going to look at him and say, okay, name me, how many people do you think were involved in Epstein Island with the young girls, with the underage girls? And they will say, well, the Pam Blondie, she, to use your term, she said there's thousands. And I'm like, okay. Now, how many billionaires can you name? I want their first and last name. And they're like, I don't know. Okay. And see, this is the problem, because the billionaire community, Doug, is a very tight-knit community. These guys go to the same parties.
Yep.
They go to the same summits. Okay. Davos, right?
Oh, yeah.
Other places. They get together. They talk. And I swear to God, if it were a blackmail scheme, it wouldn't have lasted 3 weeks. So when you look at the need of the agencies at the time this all started, they needed dark money. If they had blackmailed one billionaire, the word would have gotten out in 48 hours and the money would have dried up. See, and this is the thing people don't understand. Name me a blackmail scheme that's lasted one decade, much less four.
Oh, very few. Well, I can't. I don't think.
The closest thing that I could come up with, if I were arguing on the other side of the debate, closest thing I could come up with is the oil for food scandal at the UN. There was some serious blackmail going on there. But
Yeah, and, okay.
And money getting redistributed. But my point is that in the billionaire community, these guys have resources. They have lawyers. They have communications people. They have public affairs people. They have all of these resources. And if the intelligence community had tried to blackmail a couple of these guys, the word would have been out in less than a week and the money would have dried up. And this has been going on for 40 years. 45 years this has been going on. And I'm telling you, it was never about blackmail. It was always about raising money for black projects that the taxpayers and their elected representatives refuse to fund, is raising money for those kinds of projects.
Now, let me ask you this. A lot of people, that you made a statement there, and I, based on everything I've got here, I tend to agree with that, okay? But how would you know? In other words, are you in a position to know this because of connections you have, because you were told this, or because of simply your own deductions?
Connections I have.
Connections you have. Okay. All right.
And people I've interviewed, people I've asked, and from officers of banks overseas to, there are multiple sources that can confirm what I'm telling you. I'm not saying they will, but they could if they wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that. Okay.
And so when you look at this dark money, black project relationship that's gone on for 4.5 decades at a huge level, we're talking billions of dollars. Okay. And then I want to contrast with that the enormous multitude of threats that America is under right now because of the Biden administration. And they're absolutely letting their guard down and not protecting America. Trump is in an almost insurmountable coffin corner. And I pray for that man every day. I'm not the kind of guy that's into human worship. I don't even celebrate birthdays because I don't believe in human worship. But Trump and his team have challenges in front of them no president has ever faced. And I can list some of them. EMP weapons, supersonic gliders with nukes on them, weather control. There's higher speed ballistic missiles. I mean, there's so many things out there that we have not built a reasonable defense for, an effective defense for, and Trump knows it. And it's a lot Biden's fault. It's partly Trump's fault from the first term. He picked a cabinet to try and compromise with the RNC, and they all stabbed him in the back. That was another fail.
Right.
And he refused to chop some heads off in under his own executive branch that were stabbing him in the back. The appointment of Comey? Really? The appointment of Christopher Wray? Really? Mm-hmm. Did he even look into their backgrounds a little bit? I mean, absolutely insane mistakes by Donald Trump in the first administration. Now, the good news is that he's learned most of the lessons from the mistakes in the first administration. He's doing a lot of things right. The problem is the problems are so many, such a multitude, it's so vast, and the solutions are so expensive. My big question is, does anyone really expect Donald Trump to destroy a funding mechanism that may be the thing that saves America? As corrupt as it is, I suspect that his plan would be to forestall any real information on Epstein and some of the other dark financiers until the big, beautiful bill was passed, until we had a couple of years of a DOD budget that could fund solutions to some of the defensive issues that we face. And so, like I said, there's no perfect president. There's no perfect candidates. So the question then becomes, what does Trump do? Does he compromise all of America and destroy this mechanism? Or does he try to logistically solve the problem by growing our economy, providing all the money he needs to give the defense to solutions that we actually need to continue America? Because our enemies want to destroy us. And they are many. They are not few. They are many. And the technology and the acceleration of AI means that if we lose the AI race over the next 5 years, our enemies will have the mechanism to destroy us at their fingertips. And nobody understands how critical this is. Trump's team understands it. Trump's strategists understand it. The points have been made. But the problem is, go back to what Omar Bradley, General Bradley said, amateur study tactics, professional study logistics. If we don't have the money to finance the solutions, we don't survive. And that's the bad news. And so what do we want Donald Trump to do? Do we want to fracture the Republican Party? Do we want to destroy Donald Trump for his lack of transparency? I mean, let's talk about the Trump base. The Trump base is made up, and I'll throw a few categories out. The Trump base is made up of A, Republicans that want to stay connected to power. B, it's made up of gun owners, people that believe in the Second Amendment. C, moral conservatives that are anti-abortion, anti-gambling, and anti-sin, basically, right? And D, people that want transparency, that long for the ability to trust their government. Okay, so there are factions, and some people are part of two factions. Some people are part of three of those factions. Some people might be part of all four. Just depends on the person. But these are the things that make up the MAGA base. And Trump completely screwed 100 million gun owners in this country with the big, beautiful bill. Not good for Donald Trump. Not good for the MAGA movement.
With the bill. Well, how they screw the gun owners.
Okay, so the House passed a version of the big, beautiful bill and sent it to the Senate.
Right.
That version had the Hearing Protection Act in it.
The suppressors, right.
Yeah. That would take suppressors, short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns out of the NFA.
Right.
And go a very long way in restoring our Second Amendment in the United States. Now, instead of the Senate passing that with the big, beautiful bill with the Hearing Protection Act, they took the Hearing Protection Act out and they added like $1.6 trillion in spending in addition to what the House passed. And that infuriated fiscal conservatives. It infuriated gun owners. And here's the problem for Donald Trump. There's 100 million gun owners in this country. Probably 40 to 50 million of them voted for Trump in the last election. If 5 million of those, if just 10 to 5% stay home in the midterms,
that's a problem.
This country's toast.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, I'm so angry about them pulling that out. I don't want to vote for Trump or Trump's candidates in the midterm. I'm ready for a third party. I've had enough of this corruption. But here's the problem. After thinking about that for better part of a month, you know, my brain is like, well, just slow down here a little bit. What if we do lose the midterms in a big way? What happens to my grandchildren? And I'm like, uh-oh. Maybe I should keep my mouth shut. I want a third party so bad that represents Americans. And Trump's tried to go there, but Trump's between a rock and a hard place. And
Musk has gone there, by the way.
Yeah. Do you blame him?
No,
I don't.
But the way things are set up, having a third party would be the only party that would, the only candidates that would hurt would be the conservatives, really. The third party at this point.
I don't know. The biggest third party win I can remember is the UDT guy from the Navy that became governor of Minnesota. He was in the first Predator movie, I think. Is that Governor Ventura? Who was that?
Ventura.
Yeah, it might have been Ventura. And he's the guy that sued the Kyle that made American Sniper, was the star of American Sniper. Kyle lied about Ventura, said he punched Ventura in a bar in Tijuana or someplace knocked him out, cost his wife over $1 million. He's dead now. His wife's got to pay Ventura $1 million because he lied. You know, there are ways for third parties to win. It's a difficult ask at the national level.
Okay.
So I took you off track.
I don't want to do that. Continue with going forward, because the only, well, before you go forward conceptually, and I just want to address this. When you talk about the Epstein dark money, dark projects and all of this, not being about blackmail, but this is about the funding of dark projects to keep us in play, keep the country, keep the nation in play, keep us safe, keep us. Is that correct?
Well, what I'm saying is that the CIA and other intelligence agencies, 19 that I know of, have long not worked for the American people. Okay. This has been the norm. But Trump has tried to change that. He's tried to get rid of most of the bad actors at DOJ, Department of Homeland Security, Central Intelligence. You know, he has attempted to straighten these agencies out. And I think that it's unreasonable to expect Trump to provide real transparency on the Epstein thing and destroy these people that provide all of this dark money to these financiers.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And I think in the short term, it's unreasonable. In the long term, I hope that he changes the system. But in the short term, what does Trump do? Does he flip a coin? Which risk do I want? You know, do I want the hemlock or do I want the arsenic? It's a tough spot to be in. I wouldn't want to be president today.
No, I'm right there with you. But let's just say that, and I accept what you're saying, okay, because it does make sense. If this was about blackmail, it'd be over five times already. But okay, so this is about dark money. But my question to you, given Epstein's alleged demise by death or disappearance, whatever, and you can comment on that as well, are you saying let human child sex trafficking go unpunished?
No. Okay. I want it punished.
Okay.
I want it punished to the fullest extent. I want these people hung with cheap Chinese rope. They're not worth a bullet.
Then how can you have both? If you're,
well, here's the problem. Ahead. Trump has a choice. And so what was the pedophilia about? Let's talk a little bit more in depth about that. What was the pedophilia about? See, international businessmen that own billions of dollars, they have every ability to do transactions in dollars and euros and the denarii, whatever currency you want. Most of them have been disillusioned about women and their marriages by the time they hit 60, 55 to 70. This is a typical age of these guys. They're disillusioned about their marriage. They're disillusioned about sex. Most of them are narcissistic in nature. Few of them have any sort of moral boundaries at all in the real world. And what they can't transact in, and I would have to use a crude word here, is fresh young women. That's difficult for them. That's risky for them. So when Epstein says, hey, you're one of the cool guys, you gave that money, we're going to protect your business interests in Iran, we're going to protect your business interests in Egypt, we're going to protect you in Africa, and by the way, we really like you, you're a friend of the agency, of the intel agency that you gave this money for, and we want you to come party with us. Hey, I'll send my plane, I'll pick you up. It'll be a great time. You'll have a blast. And they fly him out to this island and they have these big parties and these young, fresh girls, you know, I hate to be crude, but, you know, I'm not even going to go there. Yeah, I don't want to make the women angry. But the bottom line is they show up on this island and everybody's drinking, doing coke. These young girls are there and offered to them. And now they can transact in sexual fantasies and sexual desires with no risk in their own head. There's no risk. Now, if you're a God-believing Christian, you're like, dude, you're going to Gehenna. There'll be no stopping in Hades. You're going straight to Gehenna for this stuff, right? But to them, in their own mind, there's no risk now. So they can now transact in the currency of young women without risk. And what Epstein learned very quickly was the more he greased the skids with young women, the more money these guys were willing to cough up. And that's why there's over 1,000 victims. It's not because we had 1,000 people to blackmail. That's utterly ridiculous. But it's because multiple parties, same group of billionaires, fresh women every time they show up. This is what they're like, hey, this is cool. I get the Mossad protecting my stuff. I get French intelligence. I get British intelligence. I get the CIA covering my back because I'm a friend of these agencies. And see, this is the thing. Everyone wants to say, well, Epstein was a Mossad agent. No, he wasn't. Epstein raised money for all kinds of agencies.
Okay, before you go there, because that I'm glad you brought that up, but I want to ask this. You had mentioned the scenario, the island, you know, young women, the supply of young women and the guys going down there. Based on any information you have, are we talking as well as young women? Any children, and I mean young infants, from infant to very young children, being involved in that process with Epstein?
My sources are saying 13 to 16 year olds.
Okay, all right.
That's what my contacts are telling me. And
Sam, the reason I ask that is when we looked to the best that we had of the information with respect to Epstein, the island alone, we could not definitively identify anyone really below the age, I'm going to say 13, 14, roughly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, however, that doesn't excuse anything. I'm just saying. No. But then you have people out there on the with various podcasts and broadcasts saying, you know what? They're killing babies. Well, wait a second. Exactly. Now, there's a lot of weird crap that went on, but hang on now. Yeah. This is not what you've got to differentiate this between the Clinton stuff, but I digress. Continue with that. Go ahead, sir.
Well, as sexually bankrupt as most billionaires can be, I would say it would be less than 3% that would want to hurt a 10-year-old child or younger.
Yes.
I think that's the small percentage. And you got to understand, Epstein was in it for the money. These hot girls,
motivation. Yes. Thank you.
These hot young girls were what attracted the majority of the clientele. So why would Epstein risk having a 5-year-old boy or a baby, okay, and letting his clients find out that was going on, which would turn them off, wouldn't turn them on. See, Epstein wanted to turn on the financiers. Because that experience with young girls changed the viscosity of the money and increased the flow. He didn't want to do anything to decrease the flow of the money. None of these financiers wanted to.
Thank you, because a lot of people are confusing, actually, the Marina Abramovics and the Podesta, the Clinton, those kind of activities, which is
well, we
not...
Know, we know go Clinton ahead. Got on Epstein's plane on multiple occasions,
yes.
But sometimes it didn't even take off. My sources are telling me that there were times when Bill Clinton got on Jeffrey Epstein's plane just for a little service.
Right, right.
And it never took off inside the continental United States.
Yeah. Again, and folks, Marco Polo has a lot of documentation. Sam, I'm sure you're familiar with Marco Polo, the former White House connected individual. Anyway, cite Marco Polo with all of the emails and all of that going back years. He's the one that wrote the book about all the emails. But anyway, yes, you're correct in this. And I just want to make sure people differentiate between it's kind of like a cocaine dealer not dipping into his own supply. And maybe that's a bad example, but you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot over. Hey, you know what? Continue. I'm just not going to try to even make comparison.
Well, a normal human being with a moral framework can't understand any of these things because it's pure evil.
Yes.
It's not something you can relate to. You know, if you've seen some of the things that I've seen, if you've seen women with their breasts cut off so they can't feed their babies, okay? If you've seen women that had a headpiece blown out of position and exposed part of their face, and a crazy Shia Muslim jump out of a car, grab them and stab them and leave them laying in the streets. I mean, it's very difficult for a normal person to wrap their arms around evil. If you had seen someone take a 12.7 HMG and a bulldozer and dig a trench the width of the bucket, 8-9 feet deep, and line a bunch of women and children up to it, and with a technical 12.7 in the back of a pickup truck, gun them into the ditch. Okay, a la Serbia, Milosevic and his clowns. If you've seen these things, they're shocking.
Yep.
They're infuriating. They bring tears to your eyes. It's impossible to understand the motivation for something like that for a normal, healthy human being. And I'm not even saying I'm normal and healthy. I don't know how I could be at this point.
I don't, quite frankly, I don't think you are. Disparaging you.
No, I accept that.
You're scarred. I mean,
it leaves a mark. It leaves a hole in you is what it does.
Exactly. There is absolutely no way you can witness that and not be impacted by it. And if you were not impacted by it, I'd be very worried about you.
Right. You'd be numb.
Yeah.
You'd be a numb sociopath if it didn't affect you.
Exactly.
But the bottom line is when you see evil past a certain level where it's almost like you know that satanic forces are involved because human beings weren't made to do things like this to other human beings. When you see that, my boss told me before I went out on my first job, he said, I'm just going to tell you this. I said, tell me what? His name was Bill. And he said, well, I want to tell you something. Hey, he said, by the way, are you a religious man? I said, you know where I'm at religiously. He goes, okay, well, if you're a religious man, the things that you're going to see are going to leave a God-sized hole in you. And so you better get ready for it. Brace yourself, young man. That's what he said to me. I will never forget that conversation with Bill. By the way, that same man, decades later, I worked for his company and we were driving back from Kansas City. You know where the big military prison is out there? Leavenworth. You ever heard of that place?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they also have a really cool computer training simulation area in that base. They've got a lot. There's a lot more things there than just a prison. That's what I'm telling you. And we were there doing a command post exercise for 48 hours based on nuclear incidents. And we're driving back down Highway 70, going back to the St. Louis area, St. Louis County area. This was on September 9th. And Bill's driving his Jeep Grand Cherokee, and he looks over at me and he says, "You know, if those radical Muslims were smart, they'd just hijack a bunch of planes and fly them right into the U.S. Capitol." And I said, "Attack the government with planes?" He goes, "Jet aircraft, commercial aircraft. It'd be a piece of cake. I can't believe they haven't figured this out yet." 2 days later, 9/11, and the towers supposedly get hit, and the Pentagon gets hit, right? All this other stuff. But he was a very interesting character to work for.
Mm.
And he's the guy that told me this job's going to leave a God-sized hole in you. I go, "What does a God-sized hole mean to you, Bill?" And he said, "It means that God's the only thing that'll fill it."
Amen to that. And that is a great depiction. God-sized hole. Folks, please understand what Sam is saying here and really listen to what he's got to say. Don't just listen, but contemplate the information he's providing. This is extremely valuable. Sam Andrews, of course, Freedom Center. The links to Sam Andrews will be down at the Hagman PI program description box, freedomtrain.net. I got that right, didn't I?
Freedomtrain.net.
Freedomtrain.net. There it is on your screen. If I'm going to say this, if you want the premier training with weapons, or if you want the best weapon you could possibly buy by spec, that's the man to talk to. When I say best, I'm talking about one that's going to work. You know how you buy suits, guys? You can go to the department store. You can go to, a tailor. Well, he's the tailor of weaponry. Sam Andrews, Freedom Center USA. It's on your screen. And, of course, it's freedomtrain.net if you want to get a hold of him. All of the contact information is at that link. Sam, continue, sir.
Well, here's the problem. I keep thinking about the quote, the words in red in the Gospel of John, I believe it's chapter 8, where Christ said, "The truth will set you free." Okay. I'm pretty sure Donald Trump's read that. The problem is, and I've had this problem my whole life, I know what the right thing to do is. You know, when I snuck my girlfriend into my bedroom at 15 years of age that lived across the lake for some overly affectionate time, I knew it was wrong, but I did it anyway.
But to be clear, you were not 45 years old at the time. Okay,
no, I was the same age as she was.
Okay, 15, all right.
But I knew it was wrong, and my grandmother walks in the room while we're being passionate with each other and says, "Oh my God, you're going to go to hell, young man, if you don't change your ways." And she said, "I want to talk to you upstairs right now." And she slammed the door and walked away. And my girlfriend's name was Lynn at the time. And I was just like, "Well, Lynn, I guess you better row back across the lake. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I think I'm in trouble." Right. But I knew I was in trouble. See, but here's the thing. Men, and you know this, look, there's four people in Scripture that never sinned. I'm not in Scripture, and I'm not one of those guys. Okay, I've made plenty of mistakes. But you have Enoch, you have Elijah, you have Elisha, right? And you have Christ. There's a four people Scripture said were blameless. Okay, and Christ is the only one that suffered a physical death. Okay, the other three ascended into heaven with no physical death. And so it's an interesting thing to read the Bible from beginning to end. I would highly encourage it to anyone who's willing to take the time. But the funny thing is that men sometimes know the right thing to do and still do the wrong thing. And they try to justify it in their own mind. Okay, so Donald Trump is in such a tough spot right now. Because if he can turn the CIA around, to work for America, which he's desperately trying to do at this very moment.
Who are they working for?
Say what now?
Who are they working for? If they're not working for America, who is the CIA working for?
Okay, so when I work for an agency, and let's define work for an agency, because that's been a big thing with Epstein. He worked for the Mossad, or he worked for the CIA, or he worked for British MI6. It's not how it works, folks. Okay, so you know what a 202 report is by an FBI agent, right?
Yeah, a 302.
A 302?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
So there's a certain number of a file if you work for the CIA, if you're an asset of the CIA, right? There's a personnel file on you. Okay. Even if you're not an employee, there's a difference between an employee and an asset. Okay. So everybody's saying, oh, Epstein was an asset of the Mossad, or he was an asset of the CIA, or there's no 203 file. There's no personnel file on Epstein as an asset. None of the dark money financiers ever had personnel files, ever had 203s on. It just doesn't exist. That's not the way it worked. Okay, you don't make lists of people like that. You don't make lists of the donors, and you don't make lists of the facilitators or the dark money financiers. They're not on any lists, okay? And their clients aren't in any lists, okay? But like Trump said, look at the hedge fund managers. You know, that's like a grenade, like bullseye,
right?
With that statement. And I doubt you'll ever hear that statement played again on the news. And so the question is, can you stop the pedophilia? I bet a lot of it's been shut down since Epstein, because that was kind of one of his things. Not all the other financiers were into that. Epstein said, I can flow more money if I grease the skids with these young girls. Some of the other financiers weren't that creative when it came to women or young girls.
Okay.
That was kind of an Epstein thing. Right, I'm not saying none of the financiers did any of that. I'm just saying that a number of them were not into that. That was kind Correct. Of an Epstein. Epstein took it to the major league level, you know, the pedophilia thing. But here's the thing. Is Trump going to out some of his biggest donors? Is he going to out some of the people that are helping fund the projects that he can't get money through Congress to fund? Is he going to out those people? I don't see it. I don't see it happening in the near term. I see a delay strategy for at least 2 years.
How do you justify that? In other words,
Stopped the pedophilia, right? And maybe he's getting a little less money. I suspect he did. And maybe he's getting a little less money flowing from the dark money sources, but he's still getting some money. Or maybe it's coming from places he doesn't even know about.
Oh, okay.
Maybe the CIA hasn't told him.
But
CIA does
there.
Not tell the president everything. I'm just telling him.
Yeah, I guarantee it. But what would stop Trump's Department of Justice, Pam Bondi, what would stop her if the pedophilia has stopped? If Epstein is truly dead, there's no more Epstein network as it once existed, to grab, to feed the masses a few of the perpetrators.
A couple of sacrificial lambs.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I expect.
Okay.
I expect he's going to pick a dark money financier that's on his deathbed or just recently died. He's going to throw a couple of tidbits of red meat at everybody, okay, and try to delay this thing. I don't think you're going to get full transparency. I don't think you can. And the other thing, the thing that stops Blondie is naivete. She was a state-level prosecutor. She's had her head so far up her own ego that she didn't even... She probably never even read. Okay, so there's an office in the Department of Justice, not far from Pam Bondi's door, called the Office of Professional Responsibility.
Okay? Absolutely, yep.
Now, let me, under Trump, in 2018, They arrest Epstein, and want to hit him hard. The FBI does, right?
Yep.
Well, DOJ, which is over the FBI in authority, shuts the charges down, shuts the investigation down, gives Epstein a sweetheart deal. This gal in Florida, reporter, writes a series of articles over several weeks just lambasting the Department of Justice for giving this pedophile a sweetheart deal. So Trump's, we're talking 2019, Trump's Department of Justice says, oh, wait a minute, you don't trust us? You don't think we're doing the right thing? Okay, well, we'll bring in the Office of Professional Responsibility to investigate us. In other words, we'll do an investigation on ourselves and still trust. And that way you can trust us.
Right.
And the stupidity of that, right?
Yeah.
But see, what most people don't understand is that the CIA has an Office of the General Counsel. Now, the Office of the General Counsel is some of the sharpest lawyers on planet Earth. I'm just telling you, these guys know what law schools to go to and how to find some of the smartest people walking. They're way smarter than the average DOJ attorney. And the Office of the General Counsel interfaces, the Office of the General Counsel, the CIA, interfaces with the Office of Professional Responsibility on any matters that are sensitive, compartmented, classified, anything like that. And so to say we'll have the Office of Professional Responsibility audit us on the Jeffrey Epstein ordeal, so you're going to take the general counsel's best friends in DOJ and tell them to take an honest look? It's ridiculous. Now, I don't think the report came out until Biden was just about in office, but all that stuff took place under Trump in his first term. So, see, this is really problematic for Trump on a lot of levels. And I guess the question is, do we really want the next Kamala Harris to be controlling our intelligence agencies? Or do we want to trust Donald Trump to be transparent when he can still protect America being transparent?
If Donald Trump cannot control and does not control our intelligence agencies, which I really don't think he's got that. Well, he's got the ability, but not the practical application. Then what makes you think Kamala would be able to control, or insert name here, would be able to control?
Well, any name has always had trouble controlling our intelligence agencies.
Right.
Because our intelligence agencies don't tell the president everything. You ever heard, do you remember when you were raising your kids and they were young and you come home from work and you look at your wife and go, what did he do? Why is he in trouble today? And your wife looked at you and said, it's probably better I don't tell you. It's probably better you don't know. And you're like, come on, woman, spit it out. What'd he do? You remember those conversations? Did you have any of those when you were raising kids? We all have, right?
Something like that, yes.
Similar to that, right?
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to know? Because it might be better if you didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, can you promise not to get mad? I don't even promise know what it is. You're asking me to promise? Are you kidding me? Oh, I've heard it all from my children's mom. So it's just hilarious. But the agencies operate like that. They try to get stuff done in ways that self-enrich the operators. And also, it's a lot of times better off if you don't inform the president. You just do it. Because I know, you know, you think Reagan wanted to know all the details about Mena, Arkansas?
No, I mean, the plausible deniability part, too. Yeah, obviously not. No, that all the North Iran-Contra, that whole business, very distasteful, I might add, but here we are. Go on.
Well, we were fighting the encroachment of the Chinese on our continent. You know, basically, I mean, that's what we were doing. Now, is bringing drugs into the U.S., selling them to raise money to buy weapons through Israel from Iran? I mean, that's almost too weird to believe, but that's what happened.
And thank you for laying that out the way you just did. You can't say it any plainer than that. And when people hear that, they can't wrap their mind around that. But that's exactly what happened.
And by the way, Nancy, we need that Just Say No campaign to get revved up a little, right?
Well, I was never a big fan of Just Say No, but okay. I think
that expressed a profound understanding of the addictive personality, did it not?
Profound indeed, yes. Just say no.
Just say no.
No thanks.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That'll work.
But that's funny. The things that I've learned about addictive personalities, basically, if it's not drugs, it's gambling. If it's not gambling, it's sex. If it's addictive personalities will find something to become addicted to.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Holly North took advantage of that.
Oh, yeah.
Fact of human nature. And he exploited and probably led to the death of a lot of American children, teenagers, young adults.
But can you justify that?
That's the moral question, that's the point I'm trying to make tonight. Is there's a bigger moral question, right? Can you justify the death of a certain number of innocents? By the way, if you say yes, you've got to tell me what that number is.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. Okay. Yes.
But can you justify the death? Look at what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did. Okay. He knew Hawaii was going to be attacked.
Yep.
He knew way ahead of time. We moved ships knowing this attack was coming. But we sacrificed how many sailors in that attack on Pearl Harbor?
And how many times has that played out over and over again with different people, administrations?
Was it Israel in 67 that attacked one of our Navy ships and killed
Liberty? Does a Liberty ring a bell? Okay. Anyway, yeah.
I mean, we could go on for the next 3 hours about the corrupt things where men in leadership sacrifice one group of Americans with the moral reasoning or immoral reasoning, depending on how you look at it, of saving the whole of American life. Okay, now, what if we hadn't gotten in World War II and Germany didn't have to fight the Russians on one front and us on the other front? They didn't have to fight a two-front war. What would have happened if we had stayed out? And Delano Roosevelt had basically mitigated the damage of any attack on Pearl Harbor, and Americans weren't interested in getting involved in World War II at the level we did. What would have happened? See, Hitler made a huge mistake by trying to fight the Russians and the Europeans and us at the same time. He lost.
Right.
Because he spread himself too thin. That's as simple as I can explain it from a strategic standpoint.
Right.
But what if we had stayed out and he had defeated Russia? Where would we be today? You know, a very interesting question to think about. And I don't know the answer, but I got to tell you, I am glad we defeated Hitler. I'm glad Patton's army went over there and kicked Rommel's butt in various places and then ran to Berlin. I'm very happy about that. But what did it take to get Americans to wake up? And see, this is the problem is leadership tends to see the average American as very unsophisticated. And so you've got Delano Roosevelt in the White House going, oh, this is a problem. This Hitler guy is a major problem. And no one in America has any stomach for this after World War I. They don't want us involved in another war. And I understand Americans not wanting us involved in wars. I get it. I don't want to send my son to die. I don't want my grandson going overseas to die for somebody else's cause. I get that. I agree. Right? But can you honestly say that? When you have a threat as large as 1939 Germany, can you say that and say there will be no negative consequences if I don't get involved? Do you have a crystal ball? Can you make that claim reliably? I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't alive in 1939. I don't know. I certainly wasn't an adult back then. And these are the kind of moral questions. You know, you remember the movie Patton?
Oh, yeah.
Where he starts moving a bunch of guys really aggressively, and we start losing guys, and Bradley loses his mind and says, what the hell are you doing? You're just killing these young guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
These are the questions that generals have to answer. But here's the thing. They only answered to three people, the Secretary of Defense, the President, and God. And they have to make those decisions one way or the other. How lucky are most people never to be put in that position? And see, this is the gravity of the situation right now. This is as big as any decision was ever made in World War II. Do we fracture the Trump base over the Second Amendment being ignored and transparency being a lie by the Trump administration? You know what they like to say? Is it Caroline Leavitt, the cute, smart as a whip blonde that does the press meetings?
Yep.
And she's like, this is the most transparent president in history. And that's probably true, except that's not saying much.
You're right.
You could be the most transparent president in history and still not be telling us anything.
Pretty much.
Because presidents lie. Presidents hide things. Governments hide things. And they've been doing it for the better part of 300 years in America.
So, okay. Then I've got to ask, getting back on topic with Epstein, I've got to ask. You had Pam Bondi saying, well, first of all, let's go back a little bit. You had Dan Bongino just railing on his podcast saying, you know what? We're going to show you everything. We're going to come out just guns a-blazing. And of course, I'm paraphrasing. Then you've got Kash Patel, who writes a book, Government Gangsters, names all these names of new people. And so they're part of the FBI. Then you got Pam Bondi. Okay. Who, was selected because Matt Gaetz was tanked. Okay. So anyway, you got Bondi coming up and saying, oh, the files are on my desk. So a bunch of influencers. Oh, yeah. I mean, man, they had to feel great because they were included. They were asked to come to the White House and grab those white binders, phase one. And to your point, the most transparent administration in history on that bottom of the binder.
Really?
Epstein files, phase one. And they were all out there holding their binders up, you know, bigger than shit. We're the shit, man. We're the best. The people out there, some you listen to and still listen to, some you read. And it was all what? Bondi?
It was all smoke. Everything that was in those binders had already been in the public venue.
And yeah, public exactly. Space. And
all
then,
joke.
And then you had the infamous hostage video of Patel and Bongino, who are sitting there saying, Epstein committed suicide. There's, you know, and I mean, you look in their eyes, you watch their behavior, 180 degrees opposite of what they were. And they look like in that interview, they were being held hostage and being told what to say. You don't have to be a body language expert to see that. And Epstein suicide. Absolutely. And then Bondi's saying, well, the files now, they were over at the New York. They were hidden in New York. Now they're coming over here by the truckload. Now I've got them. And all of a sudden, there are no files. The 14 terabytes of stuff, downloaded porn. Are you kidding me? I don't think so. But hey, so my question to you, Sam Andrews with the context, what the hell's going on here? Is that just a clown show? I mean,
does anyone really believe that 1,000 victims on video and not a single perpetrator's face is on video? Not an identifying tattoo? Not a piece of jewelry?
Self-defeating? I mean, it's defeating the purpose. If among other things, go on. I'm sorry.
Well, I think you're exactly right, and I think that. Expect transparency from any administration in the current environment is an absurd expectation. Do you realize that Christ said, do not put your faith in men? See, and I feel like so many people have put their faith in Trump. And is Trump better than Biden? 100% better. He's so much better as a leader and a president, particularly economically and as a negotiator and as someone who cares about this country and loves Americans. Trump is better than Biden. He's better than Clinton, better than Obama. But is he transparent? And I got to say this, I'm not trying to justify what Trump's doing by not being transparent. But for anyone that wants to hate on Trump for not being transparent, I'm going to ask you a question. If you're over the age of 40 and your wife's overweight and you're going out to a nice place dinner or fundraiser or something like that, a charity event, and she puts on this god-awful dress and says, "How do I look, honey? Do you like it?" How many of you men would look her straight in the eye and say, "You need to put something else on. That looks terrible." How many of you would be transparent and honest? The fact is, people lie. And sometimes they do it so they don't hurt someone. Sometimes they do it to protect someone from something else. So people lie. Okay. And that's a human condition.
But we've been told that those are white lies.
So. White lies.
Yeah, white really? Lies.
What's a black lie? You didn't buy the right brand of Afro Sheen? I mean, this is ridiculous. A white lie. You're going to attach a color to it, stick a label on it so it doesn't seem so bad? So do we have a moral breakdown in our society where we don't tell the truth? Yeah, we do.
Of course, it's not just
Trump. It's me. It's you. It's everybody. Eric. It's every person that needed the blood of Christ to keep from going to Gehenna. Okay. So once we can admit that in all humility, then the question is, do we really want to fracture the Trump base and go for a third party? Or do we think the best way to protect our Christian heritage and our founding fathers' principles and our grandchildren is to support the Trump administration with their imperfections and swallow that garbage? And honestly, Doug, I haven't made up my mind yet. I'm still thinking about it.
And that's an honest answer.
I have grandchildren.
Yeah.
And if we don't support Trump and the Democrats have some success in the midterms, we'll never get this country back.
To me, and this is a good point. You've got Trump and the people on the right. Now I'm putting them all together. And folks, I get the fact that there are so many differences, but for the sake of argument, you've got such a deep divide in this country because the left what used to be the left is not the left anymore.
No, it's satanic.
Yes. So making that choice is any person of any with any reasonable sensibilities would make the choice. I'm over here. I'm on the right. I'm with the people that believe in morality. Now, does that justify things like, well, we got to let this go? And like, to me, no. I mean, I think we've got to work that out. But in the broader sense, you count me over here, period. I know because over here, with the satanic communist, wow.
Yeah, the satanic communist Satan worshiper. These people are untenable.
Right. I mean, there's nothing there.
They need to be destroyed.
Yes. And you know something? I'm ready for that. I'm okay with that. You want to come after me? Let's get it on. You want to have a civil kind of war to me? Okay. What are you waiting for? I'm okay with that. I'd prefer not. I'd prefer you just go away somewhere. But I'm okay because I'll fight. But having said that, so the divide in this country was intentional. And here we are today with this enormous moral, legal, ethical, spiritual, especially spiritual divide.
And dilemma.
Dilemma. Thanks. Thank you. So I think people are starting to wake up to that. I mean, the Chuck Schumers of the world, the My gosh, the Pelosi's and all these people, the Clintons, the Obamas, what have they done? And, but go on. Go on.
You know, normally, you know, I do a lot of different podcasts, different radio shows. People interview me all over the country. I probably do at a minimum 3 to 4 interviews a week on radio and podcasts. And they asked me to come on to answer questions about difficult or technical issues. That's okay. Basically why people have me on. The guy might have an answer to a complex scenario or a complex situation or a technical issue about a gun. You know, I do Firearms Monday every Monday morning on the Republic Broadcast Network with John Moore. I think John's been on your show more than I have. So, and that's people, they Republic Network has me on because I can answer questions about small arms, rifles and pistols and ammunition.
But you're so much more than that, but go on.
And then some people ask me on because of my strategic planning experience. Some people, you know, they have different reasons, but it's to provide answers. And honestly, I've got to apologize to you because we may have answered a couple of questions about the Epstein issue tonight. But I'll be honest with you, I got more questions than answers at this point about where we go as the Christian moral patriots of this country.
Toss one out. I mean, give me a quick, let's see if we can't work a couple of these questions out, if you don't okay. mind.
No, okay. My first question is, which my heart's really, you know, been focused on the last couple of weeks since I started to head back to the United States is, do we trust and support Trump with the lack of transparency, or do we fracture the movement? That's a huge question right Ooh. Now in my mind from a strategic aspect. And
you had to start with that one, huh?
Well, that's the biggie. That's the one that's bothering me. I don't know about you, but.
Well, okay. Looking at that situation. So the question would be, do we. Give me that question again. Others listening.
Do we trust Donald Trump and the administration, even without real transparency? Or do we demand transparency and fracture the movement? Talk about right now. What do we do tomorrow?
What makes you say that acquiescence or going along with transparency by Trump would or not? Okay.
Do we go along with the lack of transparency we've been getting from his team?
Right. Or
do we demand full transparency and risk fracturing the whole movement?
I'm a big proponent of truth, wherever it might lead. I say we demand transparency and we get it. And we dog them until we get it. That's my view. Shoot me down on that. Tell me where I'm off on that.
Well, if I were on the opposite side of the argument,
right?
I'm not sure that I am.
No.
If I were, I would say, okay, I would create a scenario. Do you know what an EMP is?
Of course. Yeah.
Do you know that the Russians have this beautiful weapon that flies into the ionosphere, draws electrons from the ionosphere and redirects them towards the United States, and they, with their EMP technology, could knock out 85% of our power grid in less than an hour.
So what would be their motivation in doing so if we demanded and received transparency? What does that have to do with our demand for transparency by President Trump?
Well, if we demand transparency right now, right? I mean, immediately.
Yeah.
And Trump cannot get the logistical things that he needs in place to defend this country, and we are attacked in that time frame, say in the next year to 2 years, 3 years, we are attacked, and we haven't developed the proper technology to defend against those types of attacks, when we pay an enormous price, possibly the destruction of our country. And so what I'm saying is, logistically to fracture the movement will cause a defunding of our protections at the border.
Oh, I get it.
At the Department of Defense. Are you willing to take that risk for the next 3 years and possibly never getting proper defenses done? I got to tell you, when I was a young man, I was an ideologue in a big way. It's like...
You were or were not?
I was.
You were.
And it was like, the truth is the only thing that matters. Let's have it right now. Come on. Give me the truth. You know? I even invented something for our special operations groups to screw on to the ends of their suppressors called the fire starter technique to get the truth out of people when we didn't have time to waterboard them or paralyze them and put them on a breath machine. I don't know if you know that technique. You probably never heard of that, but...
Take my breath away.
Yeah. When lives are on the line and I'm dealing with evil people,
yep.
You wouldn't believe the lengths I'd go to get the truth out of them. Don't need to talk about that here, but it's extensive.
Yes. Okay?
And so the reality of it is that if you're not pragmatic about it, you can die. If you're not objective and pragmatic, you can bring about the end of this country without even trying. And here's why I'm so concerned about it, is because of AI. Knowing the state of the Chinese Navy, Chinese Air Mobility Command, Russia's Navy, Russia's Air Mobility Command, the nukes that both countries have, if that were the only issues, the only real threats, I would say, let's demand truth right this second. We got time. We got time. Nobody can take this country over in the next 2 years. We got time.
But that's not true.
But with the invention of AI, with the proliferation of AI, whoever leads in that field will develop weapons so far beyond the capability of our nukes. If one of our chief enemies develops the technology that AI is capable of developing, it's over. It's over whenever they want it to be over.
But, okay.
And that can happen really fast with AI.
I am in total agreement with you. When I watched Hugo de Garris in Branson, Missouri, give a talk about Art Alex and about the advancements of AI. This is a number of years ago. He was ahead of everybody back then. And I left there. I still don't understand that. I look at the notes I took. I can't even understand my notes. But having said that, the thing I do understand is that's for all the marbles, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
It's for everything.
So let's just say China, Russia, or one of our enemies has the AI far advanced of what the U.S. has. And they're ready to, they feel froggy, so they're going to leap. What does that look like with AI?
It doesn't look like anything. It'll be over before any Americans know what hit them.
Okay, when you say it'll be over, what do you mean? And I don't want to sound obtuse when I'm asking this.
So we have 340 million Americans in the continental U.S.
Right.
And a number of millions of illegals and gotaways that aren't identified.
Correct.
Right?
Right.
Less than 2% survived the initial attack.
From what, though? AI? I mean... AI is a mechanism. It's not the weapon.
No, but okay. So let me give you an example. I'll give you a real world example as to why I'm concerned.
Okay.
Okay. You remember World War II?
I wasn't there, but I've read enough about it. Yeah.
We had aircraft carriers, right?
Yeah.
Back then. And we had planes on those aircraft carriers. Japan had carriers, right? And they flew planes off their carriers.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You remember?
Yeah. Pearl Harbor.
Okay, well, you don't remember. Okay, yeah. Well, Pearl Harbor, they sailed a bunch of ship, a bunch of carriers over and flew a bunch of planes and kamikaze our ports, right?
Right.
So those planes flew at about 200 to 300 knots, right?
Right.
So when we were in dogfights with Japanese Zeros, we're somewhat on an even playing field. Right, depend on the skill of the pilot was more important than the technology of the aircraft.
Correct.
What a lot of people don't know, it's not been talked about much or written about much, is that inside a mountain underground, the Japanese were building fighter jets, and they had the design of the Germans, the German design, the first fighter jet, and they were building like a like a three-quarter scale version of that jet underground. And they had over 60 of these jets in various parts of development. So our president makes the decision to drop the bomb, you know, Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And the war ends. They were 60 days from having these jets completely assembled and ready to fly. If they had gotten those jets, if we had been 60 days later, talk about a God thing. If we had been 60 days slower in the development of the nuclear bomb, they would have wiped out the whole Pacific fleet with those jets.
All right.
We would have had no answer for that. Okay.
You're damn right. Because that's how we won the war.
Because the speed was double.
Okay.
Right? And we won the war because our technology. I'll give you a second example.
All right. Go on.
The Battle of Shanghai.
Oh, right? Yeah. Okay.
We're talking about what? Japan and China, right?
Yep.
Or Japan and the people in Shanghai. Well, these two groups of people obviously hated each other. They knew for years they were going to go to war and duke it out. So both sides are getting ready for the war. Well, the Japanese decide that they're going to triple the number of men in their army. The people in Shanghai decide that they're going to advance the technology of their weapons and build better weapons. That's where they spent their money and their treasure. So when the Battle of Shanghai took place, the end result was about three times as many dead bodies in the streets of Shanghai as there would have been. In other words, weapons technology is really, really important, and it has been critical for hundreds of years. Don't ever think it isn't. And that's why AI changes the speed of the development of advanced weapons. See, this is the thing that people haven't really got their arms around, is that AI is going to accelerate exponentially the development of, okay, I'll give you another example. Silent drive systems on submarines. It took us years and years and years and years to develop silent drive systems. And even our best silent drive systems years ago weren't that silent. They were quieter than normal, but they weren't that quiet. As soon as we got computer-aided design and computer-aided five-axis CNC, you know, numerical controlled machines, that could build these complex shapes, our silent drive systems got really quiet. And it was the advancement in computer and computerized machining that allowed us to take that quantum leap with submarines. Now, I could go on and on and on for the next 10 hours about weapons and their design and how the technology changed the nature of that class of weaponry. But the point is obvious. The difference is that what took us 20 years to develop silent drive systems to a certain point could be done in a couple of weeks with AI.
Okay. Which I think everyone has somewhat of an understanding of the expedience behind AI. However, the application of AI to the weapon systems, whether it's ours or theirs. And then finally, okay, we're done with you, US. Okay, we're going to press the button What does that look like if it happened? What would that look like if it happened next week? Is it going to be because of AI, the nuclear capabilities are that much better, or the EMP and nukes, or the EMP, or is it everything? I mean, well, how are you going to?
Do you know what Iron Dome is?
Yes.
Yeah, there's an Iron Dome system that basically surrounds Israel.
Right.
That's a name we gave it. It's like a marketing name. It's like the Patriot Act.
Right.
Patriot Act's not patriotic. And the Iron Dome isn't iron.
No.
Okay. It's a missile defense system that catches about 87% of what Iran lobs into Israel.
Right.
The rest of it gets through because of a flooding technique that they use, and it hurts people and blows up buildings. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Iran lobbed how many missiles at Israel in the last little spat?
Oh, that's 100 plus. I don't know.
Oh, over 1,000.
1,000. Okay. Yeah.
800 to 1,000 easy. Okay. Right. There were some volleys that had 35 missiles in them. Just one group of shots
from Iran.
From Iran, all at the same time.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So let's say that your enemy has 1,000 missiles as an example.
Right.
Iran has more than that, but let's just say your enemy has 1,000 missiles and your Iron Dome system catches 90% of them.
So you got 100
in the case of nuclear weapons, that means we have 100 nukes detonate. And you remember what your guest said, the WMD guy that was on with me a month ago?
Oh, yes.
Remember what you said about the bombs that we dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima were tiny compared to the power of modern nuclear weapons.
Correct.
Yeah. It's like a hand grenade versus a mop. Okay. So can you imagine 150 megaton nukes landing on the continental U.S.?
Okay. And that's the answer I was going for. What could like one scenario look like? That would be it. But then that would cause, that would completely destroy our resources. The people, obviously, but our resources. It certainly wouldn't be conducive to an invasion by our enemies to take the spoils of the war. Right.
Well, do you remember what Einstein said about world wars?
The next one will be fought with sticks and rocks.
I pretty much understand what World War III, the weapons that World War III will be fought with, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones.
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy wasn't stupid.
Not in the least.
And if you read the last book in Scripture, right, they talk very clearly about if God doesn't intervene, none would survive. No one would survive. And so I don't think we're there yet.
Okay.
I don't think we've seen a consolidation of the banking industry. I don't think we've seen a one world government. I don't think we've seen a lot of things that need to happen before we're in the end times, directly in them. But with the advent of AI, this means that, okay, we're not in the end times today, but we might be 3 days from now. I mean, people have no idea the acceleration of change that AI brings to our world. It's hard for people to get their arms around. And I understand the difficulty, but it's real. And that's why Trump said, okay, you know, a lot of people think Trump did the tariff thing to try and enrich America. No. That's not the primary reason. That may be a byproduct, but it's not to get rid of the IRS. Trump put tariffs out there as a policy to force the industries that we need for our own defense back to the continental United States of America. Chip making, aluminum, lead mining, steel, I mean, shipbuilding, you can go on and on and on and on. But the fact is, pharmaceuticals, antibiotics, things we don't even make in America anymore.
Without legitimate, I mean, aside from the profit grabbing aspect, there's no legitimate reason why we should not be self-sufficient in every material you mentioned, every product you mentioned.
Absolutely. People hate Trump. There's a lot of people that hate Trump.
Of course.
I'm telling you, if you're an American and you have children and grandchildren, and the history books are written correctly, they're going to say that Donald Trump made one of the most brave strategic decisions of any president in history with his tariff strategy, forcing critical defensive infrastructure back to the United States, continental U.S. Computer chip making, printed circuit board, all that stuff that we need.
Yep.
And also the deals that he made for rare earth minerals that we need for defense. See, all of our weapons now require computers. Even our thermal sights on our rifles require computer chips.
See, I did not know that about the, as an aside, about the thermal imaging scopes, whatever you call them, that they were actually computerized.
Absolutely. So when you look through a normal rifle scope,
yeah.
Now we're in something I know a little bit about, weapons. Okay. When you look through a normal rifle scope, you're seeing photons from the sun or from a man-made light impinge onto an object that you're looking at. Like, let's say I have a red hat, and you're looking through your day scope, your rifle scope, at my red hat, thinking, I should shoot this guy in the head. He's such a jerk, right? And you're looking at his red hat. Why does this hat look red to you? Because the ultraviolet and infrared and visible spectrum light gets absorbed by this hat other than the frequency that is the color red, which is roughly 600 nanometers, 580 to 600. So this particular material with this color, it absorbs blue and green and yellow and purple and all this stuff, and it emits or reflects, depending on what spectrum you're looking at, reflects in a certain wavelength. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it look red. You're seeing with your scope actual photons reflected by this object or emitted by this object pass through the glass in your rifle scope and then hit the retina in the back of your eyeball.
And
your brain translates to red in a normal scope.
Right.
Actually seeing the energy that hits this bounce off and go through your rifle scope and impinge on your retina. Now,
pretty much as you would see in your eyeball. I mean, what your eyeball does, enhanced by the scope. Okay, go ahead.
Magnified by the scope.
Right.
Now, night vision is a little different. Night vision has what we call an intensifier tube. And the energy that you see in the 800 to 900 nanometer spectrum goes through the objective lens of the night vision. It impinges on the honeycomb structure of the intensifier tube. And when a photon hits a cell, a honeycomb cell in that thing, the computer creates a cascade of electrons that go to your LED screen that your eye is looking at. So you might have 20,000 to 1. So for every photon that hits a particular cell, you get 20,000 electrons go to a particular pixel on your viewing screen that's closer to your eye. So you're not looking at the energy impinging on the intensifier tube. You're looking at a computerized recreation of that with electrons. And that's why you get the green and white, or if you have the white phosphor, you get the black, gray, and white. Right. Image, depending on the technology of your intensifier tube. Now with thermal, it's similar to night vision. Thermal energy, it's a longer wavelength than night vision. It's past 900 nanometers, it's longer wavelength. And that longer wavelength goes through a special kind of lens. Ultra or infrared energy doesn't generally pass through normal glass. It sees normal glass as a mirror. But since you have a very special, expensive germanium objective lens on your thermal, the thermal energy can pass through the germanium and then it hits the thermal engine, and a computer recreates an LED image on an LED screen that your eye looks at.
But isn't that based on, forgive the erroneous terminology if I do say that, isn't that based on the frequency difference of temperatures?
Not the frequency difference. So it depends on the thermal device, but a thermal device is looking at long wave radiation emitted by an object. Okay. So it's the amount, it's the temperature. So like one thermal device might be able to distinguish 5 degrees of difference in a, right. in an object. Some thermal devices can distinguish a quarter of a degree Fahrenheit.
And is that
1 degree?
Is that why, for example, the images are not necessarily sharp?
Depends on the quality of the engine and the quality of the screen. Okay. So you have this high-res AMOLED screen, like on the thermals that I have on my sniper weapon systems, you can see craters on the moon.
Right.
You can see thermal energy on the moon, from the moon, for Christ's sake.
Okay.
I mean, you know, and like these thermal scopes, they say, okay, well, it has a range of 800 yards, or it has a range, detection range of 2,000 yards. And generally, they're talking about a mammal, you know.
Right, right.
Like a rabbit or a human or something.
Something with a heartbeat.
But the best thermal stuff can see craters on our moon through our atmosphere. Can you imagine that? That's how sensitive they are. And like the thermals that we use in our sniper weapon systems, they detect human threats at 3,000 yards.
Imagine that, folks. I mean, think about that, 3,000 yards. You got 5,280 feet in a mile. So what would that be in miles? I don't know.
3,000 yards is pretty close to 2 miles. It's just under 2 miles. But you look at some of the large objective, large thermal engines that we have on satellites, we have on helicopters and certain type of aircraft, they can detect thermal signatures from six miles up or from outer space. And we have technology now. You know how the atmosphere causes a disturbance in a picture? Yeah. You know, like when you look through a have you ever been to those lookout places where you have the giant binoculars with the massive lenses and you drop a quarter in and then you look through the binoculars for 15 minutes or something like that? Okay. Well, when you get these big lenses, it allows you to see something called mirage. And what a sniper uses to call wind. And when you look at mirage through a large magnification, like a spotting scope or a giant binocular, what you're seeing is the humidity in the atmosphere interacting with the thermal energy in the atmosphere, which is, it's like watching the ripple on the surface of a lake. It shows you what direction the wind is going and what speed, if you know how to read it.
You're taking me back to my school days when that was explained to me somewhat in that fashion, but not as eloquent, I must say, but yes.
It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
But my point is we have technology now on our telescopes. You're gonna die when I tell you this. You're just gonna laugh. You're gonna like, unreal. You know these massive observatories, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, think of a system that shoots parallel to the direction the telescope is looking at in outer space.
Wait. Think of a system.
You have a laser right next to your telescope.
Okay.
And the laser points right where the telescope points.
Okay.
Okay. Now we have a computerized system where the computerized laser system reads the movement of the laser in the atmosphere, the deflection of the light in the laser, and then adjusts the telescope to take the aberrations out of the viewing of the telescope.
No.
Oh, yeah. And they're affordable. I mean, you can buy them for a home telescope. You don't have to be a university to be able to afford one. You need to have some money, but they're not so out of touch that that a person with a nice house and a nice telescope couldn't buy one if he wanted to.
My goodness. Okay.
But so where did that technology come from?
You tell me.
Well, it came from our intel agencies, from our satellites, because we did the same thing looking back down through the atmosphere. The only reason we can read license plates with our satellites is because we have the ability to correct atmospheric aberrations with a laser system.
And that does make sense, because I got a call from the NSA. I was doing the Times crossword puzzle, and they were watching me, and they said the answer to seven down is, and they gave me the answer. So they were watching me from space. Okay, so, all right. But look, wow, that's fascinating, though. I mean, think about that.
And we have tried for years, for decades, to build a laser that would call the wind for a sniper. We spent billions of dollars on this, but we've never been successful at it. And the reason why it's been such a difficult challenge is because when you fire a sniper bullet out of a rifle, it's now a ballistic object. You can't steer it. So there could be a 10-mile-an-hour crosswind at 600, from 600 to 1,200 yards when you squeeze the trigger. And in the 5/10 of a second it takes a bullet to get to 600, the wind can change. It could drop to 2 miles an hour. So the computer makes the call, but you still miss because of the lag time and the flight time. Right, lock time plus flight time equals a bad wind call with a laser system. And that's why the laser systems have never been a huge improvement over a really experienced spotter calling the wind.
Wow. Wow. Folks, that's why Sam Andrews is very well known in the weapons industry in the, well, I'll just leave it there. Go to freedomtrain.net. Find out what he has to offer. I cannot, if there was any recommendation, well, there is, and it's mine, and it's to Freedom Center USA via online freedomtrain.net. Folks, go there. Talk to Sam. Arrange a class. Get some people together. I got a feeling you're going to probably need it. If not for your own self, but maybe to protect people like me as we get older and really can't do the things you youngsters can. So, or not. I mean, there's various levels of training, but, it's tops in the nation. That's Freedom Center USA. Freedomtrain.net is the place to go. Freedomtrain.net. Just like it sounds, freedomtrain.net. So Sam Andrews is my guest. I cannot believe what an engaging conversation. So if you don't mind going back to Epstein, because we only have like, my goodness, I don't know, 12 minutes, 15 minutes left. You brought some great points up. And folks, look, you may not, this may seem very unpalatable to you and what Sam is saying has said, but you know, you give me, to those detractors out there, you give me a different scenario that rings true. I don't think you're going to find one out there. Sam, is there anything else we should know, or where do you want to take this in the remaining time? Because you are so gracious with your time, and I'm so glad you're on the show tonight. I really appreciate it, and you're welcome back anytime, all the time. I appreciate it, man. I really do. So you take it wherever you want to go. I'll shut up because I don't want to lead you unnecessarily.
Well, I look at things from a perspective of what does God expect first? What is the best thing for my children and grandchildren second? Okay. And I'll tell you, you know, I think last time I was on, or maybe the time before that, I talked a little bit about Jack Wheeler, Dr. Jack Wheeler, the author of the Reagan Doctrine, the guy who said, I'm going to try something really hard. Now that I've broken apart the Soviet Union, I'm going to try something really hard, like abolish the IRS. Smartest guy I've ever known in my entire life. The most shrewd student of human behavior I've ever known. And he asked me a question. We're sitting there one day just eating lunch. And Jack said, you know why I fight so hard for democratic republics as a form of government internationally? And I said, well, they treat their people better. And he kind of smiled and he's, you know, like, you poor naive kid. He said, well, I'm not talking about civil wars, but give me an example in modern times where two countries that vote their representatives to be the heads of their government, they actually vote, have sent their sons and daughters to die in a war against each other. He said, the fact is that if you live in a country that's run by a legitimate republic, they will never vote to send their sons and daughters to die in a war. They will work it out. They will come up with some answer other than killing their own children. And this is why I've spent my whole life fighting for democratic republics around the world. And I have so much respect for that man because he never lied to me. Everything he told me that I was skeptical about turned out to be true. And now, as an old man, I can say emphatically that Jack was right about everything. And one of the most brilliant men that ever lived. He is as great an American as Thomas Jefferson or George Washington. I'm just going to tell you that. And okay. I don't have time to tell you why, but I'm just going to tell you I know. I've watched him in action.
All right.
He's as great American as any that has ever lived. And he said the reason we need to fight so hard for representative government is that's the only way we achieve peace in this world, peace on earth. Because when you have communist regimes and you have totalitarian regimes, they will always want to take more. They will always send young men to fight their wars. And the killing will never stop.
And how many times, folks, how many times have you heard that? Well, your sons and daughters are not going to go out and fight the wars that think of Lindsey Graham, for example, never met a potential war conflict he didn't like. Think about that. It's not your son, your daughter, your child going out. And what you just said is exactly correct. The operative word, of course, being a functional or legitimate constitutional republic.
Well, I'd like to get Lindsey Graham dressed up, and we need to go do a halo together. Let him understand, you know, how tough the job is of defending freedom and how important these people's lives are and how important it is to the children that their fathers come home. Yes. And people ask me, I got to tell you, I got an argument with my first wife and my second wife, same argument with both of them. I would invent technology and give it to our special forces group. I would invent it, develop it, refine it, perfect it, and then give it to them. And my wives lambasted me for that.
Why didn't you make him pay for it?
You should have charged him at least $500,000 for that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like a reticle design, you know?
Yeah.
I designed some reticles for Night Force. I sent them to Jeff Huber back when he was the president of Night Force USA. And I gave him the design because I knew how effective it would be. It became the most popular reticle design. It outsold all their other reticles combined for 20 years. But that's not the cool part. The cool part is our special forces guys adopted it. And there are men at home holding their grandchildren because they had that tool.
Because of that.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes.
Why do I need money for that? I don't need money. I don't need money. I need to get paid for everything, you know? And so how cool is it that I get to meet people that use tools that I made and got to come home?
I love that. And Sam, a lot of people don't understand that concept because our team did some things for this president in an investigation, did not take a dime for it. And they're like, you should. Yeah, I know you got tons of money from this. No, no. Didn't ask for it. Didn't bill it.
Yep.
But of course, working on the trafficking side of things as well, which we do, we don't, I mean, these people are in an abyss. Okay. You've got to do what you got. So I understand that. I understand that you don't charge people. Just thank you. I get that. I don't know how many people out there actually understand that, Sam. I don't know.
Well, I think a lot of people do. The guys that I worked with, the guys that were my mentors. I mean, did my mentor, I worked for a guy who did some serious smuggling in the day. He owned a company that built short takeoff and landing equipment for Learjets. And he could fly us into places we weren't supposed to be in foreign countries because he knew how to evade their radar. He created a whole system of radar detection and evasion, and he could fly at low level before we had terrain following software, which we now use for operations. We want to fly in low and undetected. We have this terrain following software. If you know about the 160th Air Regiment down at Campbell. You know, those are our top helicopter pilots. You know, those are probably the guys that piloted the mission to get bin Laden. You know, those are the kind of guys that, and they have terrain following software in their birds, and they can basically put that on terrain following mode and fly 20 feet off the treetops at ridiculous speeds. Yep. But back in the day, that was all done with pilot skill. It wasn't done with computers. And so we would insert in a place, you know, radar dishes rotate in a circle. And so if you have a way to see the timing of the circle, you know where to position your aircraft so that you can't be detected, and you just weasel your way in. And this guy was one of the three smartest guys I ever worked with. And he used to remind me all the time, I'd say, you know, you're one hell of a pilot. And he'd say, I'm not a pilot, I'm a smuggler. That's what he would say, you know. But he was an amazing pilot. He's one of two guys in history whose pilot's license wasn't a card. It was a letter from the director of the FAA. And I'm not going to use his name on the podcast, but it said, so-and-so, okay, may fly any aircraft at any time without a check ride, including but not limited to, and it named fighter jets and propeller-driven and twin engines and dirigibles and experimental aircraft and all this stuff. And then at the bottom, right before the FAA director's signature, it said, and this license is only revocable by the FAA, the director of the FAA, in writing. That was the last part of the letter. That was his license, was a letter. From the director of the FAA. But and this guy was really, really smart. And we worked on a lot of projects together. We worked on some technology together. And I remember the bank trying to steal his Learjet.
the bank trying to steal
his Learjet? Yeah, they took his Learjet. It was his test mule for the short takeoff and landing kits that he put on the wings.
Okay.
So he flew it into this grass strip. Okay. Which is too short for a Learjet to land on, but he had the short takeoff and landing equipment on it. So he flew it and he took all the kit off and he left it there. He said, well, if you want to get it, it's over at this airport right over here. If you got to repossess it. And they sent the head test pilot a Lear over there, and he paced the runway off. And we're standing there at the terminal watching him pace the runway. And he comes back and says, nobody landed that thing here. That runway is only 1,400 feet. There's no way that jet got in here. You know, I mean, it was absolutely the most hilarious discussion ever.
You want to take it?
Yeah, and he said, you want to take it? And, of course, every pilot that came and looked said, I ain't flying that out of here. I'll kill myself.
So, what a great story.
So he makes a deal with this bank